Yo. Can you hear me? You listening to
W-A-W. What a week. What a week.
Ata, welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week. Our guest this week, she has pirouetted her way from Soweto to some of the biggest world stages. She's performed for kings and leaders. She's the first black ballerina to do Dying Swan in Russia. She's always on the radio. She's always in black. Her nails are always nude. But she's not. She's next.
This is
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Celebrity guest.
Celebrity guest.
So we were having a discussion with the team and they were saying, would you interview Kitty? She is a ballerina. I was like, no, Kitty. I did ballet for one day in grade 3. So of course I'll interview Kitty Petla. Hello, kids.
How are you?
Oh, grand.
Kishab.
Kitty.
Yeah.
What's in a name?
So this is very interesting. I won't say my full name. So Martin's the man that discovered me when I went to Orange Grove Primary School.
Yes.
So I don't know what happened the one time. I think it had to do with an invoice.
Mm.
And he's a white Jewish man.
Yes.
And I used to be made fun of at school all the time with my name, my surname. I mean, people would say Kitty Fatla, things like that. You know, it was horrible in primary school. But then there was this life-changing moment. It's like, your name is long.
Mm.
From today, you're going to be Kitty. And my face just lit up. It literally changed my life, changing the name to Kitty, you know, because then I didn't have to be defined by kids making fun of my name and my surname that I'm very proud of, you know. So, and that's how I became Kitty, yeah, to this day. So Martin decided, hey, this Jewish white man, I'm going to call you Kitty from now on, yeah.
What is your full name?
Oh, white guys. I'll tell you my belly name. It's such a beautiful name.
Yes.
Bulumetsi.
Bulumetsi.
Yeah.
What
it's
is
a
that?
Water creature. It's a water lizard. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your other name, Kitty?
Oh.
It's your name. And now is the time to embrace it.
No, I mean, you know what? I think the reason why, you know, better you become your name.
Yeah.
So, I think as a child, I saw too many things that I think a child shouldn't see at my age and growing up as well. So you live up to that name.
Things like what?
Ahmed, you know, at the time where our houses used to get raided in Soweto, white policemen coming in, raiding the house, beating your mom up and turning the house upside down.
So you saw all of that?
Yeah, I saw all of that. It happened quite a lot. In Soweto, yeah, so it happened quite a lot, you know. So we used to have some uncles that used to work for ANC, and yeah, so our house used to get raided all the time. Yeah.
So how did it feel as a child seeing mom getting beaten up?
Sure, you know, at that time you knew that's not right, but you can't explain it.
Sure,
you know, because for me, I never felt like we always felt love in the house, you know what I mean? So here's our little humble abode, and then suddenly it's raided.
Yes.
You know, it's turned upside down. These men start jumping on the couches, the little bit that we've put together, you know, and just ransack the whole place. And then you sit there as, because I am the youngest of 3.
Okay.
And you're sitting there, you're like, but that's not right.
Yes.
You know, but it happens often, you know, with the riots. And then suddenly your house just gets ransacked and you're just sitting there like, that can't be right.
What did mom and dad say about these raids to you guys?
You remember we come from a time where parents don't really articulate to kids exactly what's going on. So you just see it, but there's no further articulation. You can't even ask questions.
Yes.
It's something that just happened.
Mm.
Yeah.
I want to play a quick game, right? It's just to warm you up a bit, warm your brain up.
Yeah.
You know, get your whistle going.
My God.
It's 10 questions, rapid fire, and don't overthink it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I think so.
Who in your family has the best dance moves?
I would say my late brother.
Nutcracker or Swan Lake?
Swan Lake any day.
High heels or sneakers?
Both.
If you weren't a ballerina, what would you be doing right now?
Psychology.
What's the first thing you do when you get home from a long day?
Take off my bra.
As a, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking she probably takes off her bra first and then everything else. Which stage performance was your absolute favorite?
I would say going back to the Truth of Space at the when I was awarded Stand Up and Young Artist with Teresa Macatini.
Mm.
Yeah.
One word your family would use to describe you?
One word my family would describe me?
Mm-hmm.
Clumsy.
But you can dance on your toes.
I'm extremely clumsy. I'm a klutz. It's true.
So, like, are you a clumsy ballerina?
No, I'm just...
Clumsy with everything else?
Yeah, I walk into walls, doors. I trip a lot. Even in the studio, I'll trip.
You over break my own things.
Feet. I break things. I've got butter fingers, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was just me. And I don't do ballet. If you could dance with any global artist, who would it be?
Oh, that's interesting. I think it's more like working with a choreographer, Yuri Killian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tell us about him quickly.
Yuri Killian is one of my biggest inspirations, mm-hmm. you know. But dancer, though, she's much older now. Sylvie Guillaume.
Okay.
For me, she exudes everything that has got to do with classical, contemporary, neoclassical. She's the epitome of perfection when it comes to the entirety
yes.
of what a dancer should be. Yeah.
Soweto street food or fine dining?
Fine dining, thank you.
Would you do breakfast or afternoon radio?
Afternoon.
And finally, if you could bring back one of these two famous ballerinas from the dead, Maya Plitzkaya or Beryl Gray, who would it be and why?
Maya Plitzkaya. She's just so, I love her quirkiness and I picture her in my mind. She was so romantic. That's what I love about her. Yeah. Mm. Her style was very romantic. She had beautiful lines for then. You know?
Yes.
So yeah, I love her romanticism with everything that she does. Yeah. And she's such an artist. Her quality is just so beautiful. Yeah.
I did ballet for one day.
Mm-hmm.
Grade 3, mm-hmm. there was a girl I liked, Frances. I think she's now a doctor in York in the UK, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And, like, I thought she was the love of my life. It's like, you know, when you're young, you think you love someone because we're meant to be together.
Yeah.
And there was ballet happening at another school, ballet classes. Mm-hmm. So me and my boys decided we're starting ballet today. Because some of these little white girls that we liked were also doing ballet. And we went wearing our white gym pant. Because we didn't have ballet clothes. We went wearing our white gym pant.
Ooh, I can just imagine it. No jock straps.
Nothing. Our PE tops.
Oh, my gosh.
And our tackies for PE. And then we got there. And we realized that we don't fit in here. We're not even wearing the staff. We're the only black boys there. I think there was one white boy. And we decided we're not far from the mall. So we went to the mall and bought sweets or something. So I almost did ballet.
But you showed up. That's a beauty.
Because of a girl.
It's always got to be about love, eh?
Yo.
Always.
How far have you gone for love when looking in your life?
That is interesting. As far as believing in polygamy, yeah.
Are you for real?
Yeah, I do.
And as in?
Not that it's in an experience, but it's made me think along those lines, yeah.
What brought you to that place of, if done right, polygamy might be an option?
Society, first, there's more women than men.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It's very simple. You know, I think us as women, we need to realize that it is something that we need to come around to and be more accepting of it if it's done right.
Mm.
And it holds really beautiful qualities, but I guess what it stands for today is something that is different. The dynamics are different now. But I think it's such a beautiful thing, you know, because understanding where we are today, and I think it's always been like that. Mm. You know, there was an interesting video on Instagram. This lady was explaining, you know, you know, the ratio of men right now, you know, she actually took it with peanuts, and she took the peanuts, quite a big chunk. And she said, these are men who are married, are in prison or what have, a gay, a heterosexual, da, 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 you know. And then she took a small amount. Then she crushed it up into pieces and spread it out and says, this is what we've got left in terms of single men who are available and scattered around the globe.
Yeah.
It's a very, very small ratio. Yeah.
There's a young lady I met in Maritzburg about 20 years ago. And we became friends. And very driven, very headstrong, very, I don't even say very Amandala, but she was that woman.
Yeah.
So I was shocked like 10 years ago that she's like wife number three of a dude in Maritzburg. And I mean, we never had like the bigger discussion about it, but I was just, my mind was blown.
And I applaud her for that.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and the conversation starts with men in courtship.
Okay.
You know, because you want to get to a place where, you know, you want to understand a man better, but create a comfort that he would be able to discuss such things.
Mm.
You know, that would you be interested, you know, to be in a polygamous marriage?
So would you want to disclose to the get-go, though?
Absolutely.
So that you know what you're walking
into? Absolutely, because I think most of the time women get that surprise element, which I didn't understand why they're so,
polygamy.
Of course, you can't just suddenly, we are dating, we get married, and then suddenly like, ish, listen, I want to take a second wife. Yes. That's not fair. Mm. It has to be something that has to be done in courtship. That's why, unfortunately, it lies on you men.
Okay, so you're not saying you will do it, but if it's done right and it dropped on your lap.
Yeah, because I mean, essentially my mom comes from, her father was, had two wives. And so did my dad. My dad had my grandfather had two wives.
My dad's dad had four wives.
Wow.
So my dad is the only child of wife number four.
I think two is enough.
He had four.
Wow, he's
and maybe two is enough because my grandmother's resented by the other wives.
That's the part
and the children of the other wives.
That's the
part. And as a result, my dad was not treated well.
Yeah.
And as fate would have it, my dad is the one who went the furthest in a lot of things and then ended up having to give people jobs.
Yeah.
And it was the wildest thing because I told him, I'm petty, my guy.
Yeah.
You're not getting a job.
Yeah. And that's the sad part. Yeah. You don't want it to get to that point.
Yes.
I think two is enough. You can never get to, you know, we can get to three. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
But man, I think as a guy, you really have to be headstrong to navigate around three women. I think two is enough.
Polygamous friend of mine was telling me that one of the secrets to polygamy is you need to understand that what you do in house number one, you must do in house number two and three at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's not only labor intensive, but also if we were building here or renovating there, we must do it for everyone.
I think also why I say in courtship, I think because, you know, creating a comfortable home environment for a guy, even in the beginning stages, I think is very, very important. I could be so wrong. I don't know how men think, but I'd like to think of myself as the kind of woman that would like to create a comfortable space for a male counterpart, you know, that when you get to a place, if you are together or you are married, he's comfortable enough to say, listen, I've met someone.
Mm.
And then my next question is, okay, is this going to be a girlfriend or are we taking it as a second wife?
Mm.
You know, so these are kind of conversations that are very liberating that two people should have. And I know, the sneaking around, I guess, can be fun for some people, but I would like to get to that point in life, to be that open with your best friend, supposedly,
I think sadly, because men generally, we are bad communicators, so much so that even if my intentions with you are just to have a bit of fun, I don't have the balls to communicate that with you.
Oh, man, women would appreciate that.
Because maybe you are also down to have some fun. But if I'm going to love bomb you and make you feel like you're the only one in the world, and then tomorrow turn around and say, how I thought, Rata'ala.
No, but you can't say, you see, the thing is saying it at a later stage. Yes. I said we're hanging.
Mm.
It's better to disclose in the beginning because you'd be very surprised how women would appreciate that.
I ask you that all the time with my boys, that you know that if you played open cards with your girlfriend, with your wife, you'd be amazed at what she is willing to.
Or a casual person.
Yes. You'd be amazed at what she's actually willing to accommodate in a relationship.
Yeah.
But because we're cowards half the time, and we were weak communicators. We wait until the shit has hit the fan, and then now it's apologies.
Yeah, absolutely. Because women are extremely accommodating.
Yeah.
And I strongly believe that there are really good men out there.
Mm.
You know, I just feel like they need to allow themselves to have the comfort.
Yes.
You know, to be able to trust in that process with a woman, because women are very, 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 very accommodating. Mm, yeah. Absolutely. And I'd like us to all get to that point. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. God willing.
Yeah.
How does a tomboy from Soweto end up doing some of the most incredible ballet on world stages? Like, briefly, just take us through that journey.
Yeah, I grew up with boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I always used to think I was a boy, you know, until a later stage where my brother was going to the side of the street, you know, to do his business, and I wanted to do the same thing. And I was like, okay, clearly I'm not a boy, you know. So,
really?
Yeah, I'm being dead serious. Yeah. Yeah, literally. And at that time, we had moved to Alex now.
Yes.
You know, so my brothers are always overprotective. And you remember when I chose ballet, it was by default, because when I went to Orange Grove Primary, there was a choice between karate and ballet. And if I remember clearly, I think the door on the left was a karate choice, and on the right side was karate, and on the left, I peeped through. I saw this man who was very stern, beautiful posture, a long nose. And I was like, my gosh, I want to look so eloquent like that. And that's when it changed. You know, and I was still very much of a tomboy, but as time went, I think when I was 11, because remember with him, it was not just training ballet. He was creating women.
Oh, yes.
Respectable ladies. He used to always call us ladies.
Mm.
And that's when the changeover happened. But I'm still a tomboy at heart.
But when did you realize, though, that this is bigger than just extramurals at school?
You know, all roads always lead back to Martin, because I then surrendered, trusted in the process.
Mm.
And also our parents surrendered to him as well and trusted in the process, because there was quite a few of us black kids from Alex that he took under his wing, because we all came from Alex at the time.
Yes.
And he came straight from Antwerp. He stopped his career very young, in his early 30s.
So what year is this around?
I cannot remember. I think it was 1992.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken.
Mm.
Yeah. So, and that's when the journey started. And as time went, you just realized that, you know what, trust in the guy, trust in the process, and then the rest will happen as they should.
But your family was supportive from the get-go, though.
Yeah.
How was everyone else in the community dealing with the fact that you're a ballerina, but not everyone else is a ballerina?
You know what? Living in Alex at the time, it wasn't... when you're in it, you don't realize it.
Oh, yes.
You know, but what I appreciate is that I still had the times before it got really, really intense. I still had moments to be a child. So there wasn't such a big separation. You know, together, you know, so... and still build metal, what's this?
Wire cars. Yes.
Still kill birds, like I heard you on radio.
Yes.
And eat them.
Yes.
And roast birds. So I managed to still do all those things, and I still felt like I fitted in. But then the significant change did happen when now we are with Martin from 7 o'clock in the morning, Monday to Sunday. You know, but then when school would finish at 2 in primary school, and then we finish with him at 8 o'clock, because remember, we start off with once a week, and then he would choose kids that he would have 2 times a week, 3 times a week, and then essentially we were with him from Monday to Sunday. That was a massive significant change. Now you missed out on what was going on in the streets in the hood, because remember, now I was such a tomboy. I loved being in the streets. I wasn't a clean child, really.
Yes.
So that was a massive change, where you saw yourself being isolated from the other kids, from your friends, missing out on games on the streets. So it was a massive, massive, significant change. But at the same time, I felt like there was a massive support as well.
Yes.
From the community as well.
Lorna Maseko was part of that cohort, right?
Yeah. It was Lorna Maseko, Toriso Mahongwa, Solofela Maloka, Penelope Solwe, Nontlantla Makatini. I think I've forgotten quite a few names, but those are the ones that actually stood the test of time.
Yes.
All the way till the very end, you know.
So the very end looks like what exactly? What? Where was the very end?
So the very end, so Martin trained us all to pre-professional under Ballet Theatre African.
And all of this for free?
Or not? We had to pay fees still. Took us under his wing. So for me, I couldn't afford. So my parents couldn't afford to buy me leotards and stuff. But Martin made a way, found a way. Mm. And they paid what they could.
Obviously, yes.
So, but he never created the pressure for any of our parents, you know, because for instance, some of the kids and Alex could afford some of the things and I would borrow some stuff. I would lend some, you know what I mean? So, so we just always made it work. But then pre-professional into professional. We finished school. And then unfortunately, the company closed down, I think, when I was 25 due to funding. And also Martin lost his mom as well. So things slowed down quite significantly. But Lorna left before the company closed down and joined the other ballet company. I think it was SABT at the time, South African Ballet Theatre.
Yes.
And then Penelope also left way before as well. So essentially, the people that were still there until the very end was Teresa, I think Yolandi, and myself. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So the gig stops. What happens after that?
I was unemployed for about six months. I think I got fat, got quite disinterested in dancing. Mm.
What does fat look like for a tall woman?
Heavy, man. You can feel, you know.
Yeah.
You can feel when you're not comfortable in your own body.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but also at the time, I remember, because my memory is very bad of the things that I did. I remember briefly, I also resigned from Martin. I was in a very, very bad space and I dropped everything and I went to the Netherlands, you know, to go and pursue a career in Holland. But I could also feel that, you know, I'm not at my best, you know. But I went and danced in the Netherlands for a bit. I think I was there for about 3 months. Did some private auditions. Did a lot of classes with Netherlands Dance Theatre, which is such an amazing experience. And I worked with an incredible choreographer, Emil Greco. But then I came back, still unemployed. I was living with Teresa at the time. And then I joined Dirk Badenhorst's company, Mzansi Productions. And then that's when, and obviously when they hired me, they're like, you do know you need to shed down some kilos. And I was like, that's a given. I haven't been dancing for a while, but you need not to worry about that because I know that's what's expected of me. And I was hired as one of the soloists in the company. And then eventually that company merged with what is Joburg Ballet today.
Yes. And then you are one of the big deals there right now.
Well, I was, so in terms of ranking, because with Mzansi Productions, we were just a company of soloists. Yes. And then when we merged with Joburg Ballet, because it was South African Mzansi Ballet.
Yes.
And then they became Joburg Ballet after that. And then they were handing out our rankings, because you have to have different rankings, quarter ballet, senior quarter ballet, soloist, senior soloist, principal. So I was ranked as senior soloist. And I was with them until 2019.
Sure.
Yeah.
Often we are told tales of the blood, the sweat, the broken toenails, and the tears that come with performing at the level at which you perform. Would you say, though, that sharpening that side of the discipline within you allows you to be able to be resilient in other parts of your life?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because your threshold is that high.
Yes.
Your pain threshold is that high. Your survival threshold is that high. More than anything, your survival threshold that comes in with the discipline, you know, which essentially led me to understanding radio.
Yes.
As well. Because...
So you're bringing a different discipline to radio.
Yeah. Like,
because I'll tell you right now, a lot of people in radio generally are ill-disciplined. They don't care. They don't prepare. You can tell that this person is just winging it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you bring that discipline to radio.
And I tried to do the winging it because I was like, you know, because I remember I fell in love with radio. It used to be a culture of mine with my mom. We used to sit and listen to those radio stories. I think that's where it all started for most of us, you know. And I used to be fascinated about the art of radio without visually being there, but you are there,
yes.
You know. And then I was like, I really want to do this radio thing. And I kept on knocking on doors, but I had no schooling at all. No training at all. Eventually, I kept on knocking and knocking. Why? You name it. Eventually, I got to Metro. And I knew I didn't want to go to Metro, but I go, let me go knock. And Sakhala Sokhoti me saw us in peace. He gave me the time of day.
Oh, wow.
And I got a meeting with him. And he told me straight up. He's like, listen, I'm dealing with big names here in Metro. And I want you to go to Alex FM and get training.
Oh.
Literally jotted down something, hooked me up with the station manager there at the time.
Yes.
And that's where I got training for about 5 years. Because usually a person would go for a year. And he used to check in every time.
That is incredible.
Yes. He used to check in every time. I had to give him follow-ups. And people would ask me, but why are you still there at Alex FM? And I was like, because I'm not ready.
I'm growing. I'm getting my 20 hours.
Not really. So then eventually I was there for 5 years doing the 9 to 12 weekends. And man, I learned how to compile, learned how to produce as well. Crafting. You know, because I always feel like it, as people, we've got to be in pursuit of being the masters of our craft because we learn every day.
Yes.
And what I learned at Alex FM, I wouldn't have gotten anywhere else. It was completely priceless, you know, not getting paid for 5 years, but you're on the grind, you know. And then eventually I got a break at Radio 2000. And I would come in, you know, my first show that was proposed to me was to do the 3 to 6 in the morning. I love Graveyard, by the way.
I have
such profound respect for Graveyard. You have no idea.
I one day will volunteer to do a after midnight show because there's stuff I want to do on radio after midnight that is not being done right now.
Yeah. And I've got such a massive story around Graveyard because when I was hired was 3 to 6 in the morning and then they decided before they launched, you know, literally day before we went on air, that I'm going to do the 9 to 12 weekends. And I said, nope, it's too big for me. It's too big. And then Sianda said, listen, swim or drown.
Yeah.
And I literally had to swim. And I remember I was on 9 to 12 for some time. It wasn't even a year. And then I got into trouble. And Carlita Sheikh calls me in.
What had you done?
So one of my first big interviews, I was interviewing Notende.
Okay.
And literally, remember, a month before I started at Radio 2000, I'd go to 2000 just to sit and learn the desk, you know, sit in people's shows. And I was like, I'm not going to make these mistakes because I linked it with certain mistakes that you can't do on stage.
Yes.
That I will not do on radio. And my biggest fear came to light. So I was interviewing Notende, had a lot of practice. And then I decided I'm going to switch on all the mics, but the levels were down. My level was up. So, but her level was not up. You know, her fader was down.
Yeah.
And I did the whole interview sound like I was talking to myself, but you could still hear her.
Reflecting with self. So what did Kalito say?
No, listen, he gave it to me. He said, listen, you took my radio station up to here, from here to here. And he threw this disc. He says, go snoop yourself and hear how horrible that interview was because you literally, you know, basic radio 101. You messed up big time. And I was unscheduled for about, I think, a month or two.
Yeah,
he was brutal.
I think that was drastic, but yeah.
Yeah, so, and then, but my punishment was really beautiful, though. I had to sit in and run people's desks. I did for David Bashabela, I did for Ernest Pillay.
So you became an engineer. Because I think that's another thing a lot of radio programmers forget to do. Is to remind your presenters that they're also sound engineers in the middle of their shows, especially if you're running desk.
Yeah. So
output is everything.
Absolutely. But the most memorable times was the times that I spent with David Mashabela.
Yes.
Ah, taught me tricks, you know. And I thought, this is incredible, man.
So you went to University of Radio.
Oh, man, it was incredible. That's where for me, you know, because I got the training of radio at Alex FM, but the makings of radio, you know, David Mashabela was a pivotal point for that.
He was your sensei.
And silently so, without him even realizing.
Yeah.
And then I got demoted to 3 to 6. But for me, it wasn't a demotion. It was fire.
Yes.
I had so much fun because I was left alone to produce, to be a tech guy, and to run my own show. So I have such profound respect for Graveyard because from then I got moved around quite a lot. I did, then I went back to 9 to 12 and then I was moved to 3 to 6 again. And then I did midnight to 3.
Yes.
And then back to 3 to 6. So I moved around quite a lot.
Yes.
And I was there for 7 years. And you know how radio is unpredictable. And then one day you're told, thank you.
We don't need you anymore. In fact, someone in 2000 sent me a text the other day saying, I think it's one of the mixed DJs saying that I think the contracts are coming to an end or something weird like that, and that they're looking for gigs and stuff like that. And unfortunately, radio is like that.
Yeah.
It's very thankless.
It is. I used to think it was a numbers game. So I told myself, I was like, okay, if I make sure that my numbers are good.
Nah.
You know,
I'm not using for
my contract to be dissolved, you know. But I came to understand that and I delivered the numbers.
Nope. If my wife wakes up and decides that, I think her voice is rather annoying, I might make a programming decision based on that and not based on numbers. And one thing I appreciated about Prime Media is Prime Media would give you your deliverables. Mm-hmm. And Prime Media would say, we're going to give you every tool available for you to meet your deliverables. Yeah. But every week, we're going to see that you're hitting your targets. Yeah. That is how you should be managing a radio station.
Yeah.
Give me the targets. Give me the tools. If the two make sense, let's continue playing.
Yeah.
It can't just be on a whim that you decide that Kitty must go now.
Yeah.
Or Kitty's too big for your boots now. Kitty must go now. Yeah. And that's what's happening with a lot of radio management.
Yeah.
That things are just done on a whim.
And you know, it's so funny. You know, I got to a point where I was like, I've given up a radio.
Mm.
And then, you know, you still knock on doors. And I don't fear knocking on doors. I don't fear starting from bottom.
Hey? Yes.
And I don't fear working.
You've been unemployed in the Netherlands.
Yeah. So, yes.
You know what I mean?
I really, really have no fear for it. And then I went to Trans Africa.
Yeah.
We see beautiful, beautiful boss. So, so inviting, so generous with her time, and she allowed me the space as well, you know, to continue to grow.
Yeah.
And then from there, then COVID struck, and then I was not employed. I was unemployed.
Sure.
And then I find myself now at Channel Africa. It's a monopoly, man. Yeah.
You know,
it was interesting.
Talking about Aldrin Mohotsi, may his soul rest in peace. He was that guy, though. Aldrin was very selfless. I think Aldrin often downplayed the giant that he is, the giant that he was. And I remember I started radio in 92. I was 19 at the time. And in 93, by 93, I'd met Aldrin. So I'm working on a little radio station in Bots, out of B2.
Yeah.
Aldrin is this big shot radio bop DJ. And Aldrin came to Bots once to do a gig. And he gave me his landline because there were no cell phones at the time.
Yeah.
And we kept in touch. Aldrin would call and check up on me.
And then
he said to me, when are you bringing your demo to Bop?
Wow.
So then there was a one time I literally stole the car from home, prepared my demo. It was on a reel. And Aldrin waited for me at the border. And we drove to the Bob Broadcasting Complex, and he introduced me to Mudisa Nemudise and said, please take his demo, listen to it. I think this
kid is
hot.
He's a cooker.
No, Aldrin is that guy.
He's a cooker.
And then he took me on a tour of just the complex. And then he said, oh, by the way, Bra Rex Rabanye lives down the road.
Wow, that's
Let's go meet him. From there, we convoyed in my stolen car and in his car to Bra Rex Rabanye's house. Yeah. And we sat with Rex Rabanye having tea for an hour and a half. I'm like, what is this?
It's like that connecting of the dots. Like for me, it's like full circle sitting in front of you.
Yeah.
I've followed you on radio for so long. And it's like a turnaround point. And what you're saying about Aldrin is quite interesting. It reminds me so much of, for me, the art of radio, how I learned the art of radio is through Greg Maloka as well. You know, the artistic side of it, you know, how to create that imagination as well, because we used to sit down a lot. He's a great mentor as well. So it reminds you of that. So I was very fortunate enough to meet those kind of people to connect the dots as well. So it's really beautiful how you meet people for certain reasons.
Yeah.
But radio remains radio.
So that love affair with the radio it's in your heart, embedded.
Yeah, it's embedded. Yeah. But it's so funny. For instance, people always ask me, do you love what you do? And I tell them, easily, no, I don't.
Mm.
I love the respect that I have for it.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. Mm. Are you passionate about what you do? I'm like, no, I don't. I'm passionate about my family, music, you know, but the grind, I'm not passionate, because this is why I respect men, because men are very, very methodical when it comes to the grind. Sure. Very clinical, very mathematical and calculative, you know, and this is the craft. This is how I'd like to learn my craft, because I think with that, as a woman, yes, I have the advantage to bring in the emotion, but then also the intuitive part, which always put us in front of men in a way, yeah, sure, because we need to learn to use the power of our intuition as well. So for me, man, I'm passionate about my personal life, the things that I enjoy.
Sure.
But when it comes to the grind, you know, I just respect it, because I've been taught to respect myself. Yeah. And with self-respect, you turn to respect the things that you want to achieve.
Self-love leads to self-respect and often translates to, if that's the high regard they hold themselves in, I better match it or get out of the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's what Martin taught us. Yeah.
You're a lecturer though.
I'm a teacher. Yeah, I'm a teacher at NSA. I've got my own studio as well.
Okay.
I teach at the National School of the Arts, and this is where I went to high school.
Mm.
And it's also quite a turnaround point as well. And it's very interesting, the kind of kids we're dealing with today.
Mm.
And my brain is always like exploding every day, because the kids today are so different.
Yes.
And I'm constantly trying to navigate.
Like what, for instance? Like, what are you dealing with that you know you are not like that at the same age?
Yeah.
Mm.
They know so much.
Oh, yes. There's that also.
Yeah.
They know too much sometimes.
Yeah. But, you know, when it comes to the craft.
Yes.
The mentality is so different.
Mm.
Kids are so much smarter today, but they like the idea of something, but the grind.
Not the work that it would take.
Not the grind. Yeah. Not the work that it would take. It's too much work.
Are we creating better ballerinas now or 20 years ago?
It's 50-50.
Mm.
We have better quality,
but
there's too many options.
Sure.
For instance, I'll talk from my personal point. You know, I've got my student, I've got beautiful students. But I'm grappling between the options that parents have created for them, and rightfully so, because, you know, as a parent, you want to create options that you never had.
Mm.
So, yeah. So a child of 8 can't commit to just ballet.
Yes.
They have to do swimming. They have to do piano. They have to do hussy. They have to do this. Mm. So I'm fighting for that 1 hour a week or 2 hours a week.
So it almost becomes difficult for them to master it at the level they could.
Absolutely.
If they gave it more time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A child at 9 should be coming to ballet every day.
Mm.
But I've got to understand that they have to be loyal to their options.
Yes.
They can't have one option. Having one option is not an option.
You know what? I think it's beautiful that that can happen,
mm-hmm.
that children have these options.
It's a bittersweet. Yeah.
But we are also creating children that are not necessarily going to know how to stay the course, be steadfast, resolute, and see something to its logical end. Because now there's another option.
Yeah.
And I see it with my kids even.
Me too.
I mean, my son was brilliant at tennis. Mm. He quit. He was brilliant at basketball. He quit. Mm. I'm talking so good, I could have retired. But when a child loses interest, what do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do?
Like, I'm raising my niece. She's my little girl. She was also doing ballet. And, you know, she has such a natural ability.
Mm.
And which I thought was such a worry, because I didn't want her to grow up with the pressures as well. She must have her own journey. Then, I don't know, last year she was like, no.
Mm.
I don't feel like it anymore. I don't want to do ballet. So I asked her, what's your reason? She says, it's too hard. And I said, but Nana, that's not a reason.
Mm.
Let's use the December holidays to really come up with a better reason.
Mm.
And then the December holidays happened, and I was hoping for, you know, a solid answer. It wasn't actually the December holidays, it was the winter holidays now. Excuse me. And she didn't come up with a solid answer. She's like, no. Mm-mm.
I don't want.
But then also it spoke to her ADHD. She's very forgetful. And dancing, you have to remember a lot of things all the time. It's very repetitive, and you have to remember. So it made her face her struggles. Mm. So as a result, that's too difficult. Mm. And she could have been so beautiful as a ballerina, but I can't force her. Mm. Can't force her.
How is raising Lesedi?
Oh, man.
And why did you step up at a parent level for your niece? Because a lot of Black families deal with that, where you lose a sibling, and if they have children, it almost becomes a, where are they going to go now? And for some families, it becomes a source of conflict. And you have children who end up feeling unwanted.
Yeah.
Because I'm being taken from pillar to post, to Rakhadi, to auntie, to Gogo. Gogo passes away. The uncle that's unemployed that lives with Gogo doesn't want me here anymore. Mm. A lot of adults went through traumatic childhoods because of that.
Yeah.
But you decided my brother has passed away and I want to step up.
It's actually my eldest brother's daughter. My eldest brother's still alive. Oh, dad, okay. So it was my other brother who passed away. So, you know, it's so funny. You know, I grew up with three boys and they all chose their own path. Mm. My older brother's dealing with his own things. You know, life's tough for him.
Yes.
And I just felt I need to give her a better life, you know, because my parents tried their best to raise us the best that they could. And we came from such a hard upbringing, you know, abusive father and so forth. And I thought, man, it's a girl child. I got to try, you know, and it scared me to the core and it still scares me now. Mm. And now I understood what parents would say. The moment you have a child, your heart is literally on the outside.
Yes.
And it's very exposed, you know, but I took that upon myself and I was like, no, I need to give her some kind of a better life, because it also came after my mom passed away. Mm. And it came from panic,
sure.
You know, because mom was the ethos of everybody, you know. So it came at a point like, it's either do it or don't.
Mm.
And I had to.
How long did the decision take for you to make? Was it like, I need to think about it, or was it like a no-brainer?
So
I'm doing this.
So we had an incident where, you know, my brother tried to hurt himself. And after that, that's when I realized I need to raise my child or raise my niece, you know, and allow my brother the time to heal. Mm. You know what I mean? So, and it was instant.
Mm.
I didn't even need to think about it. It was just the right thing to do.
Where did you turn to outside of your instincts when it got tough? Or where do you turn to when it gets tough raising a girl?
Other parents.
Mm.
Other parents, friends, you know, call a friend.
And you've got like a dope network of friends, like Onati, Spogazi, like, and I love the sisterhood that I see between you guys.
Yeah, it's incredible. And more than anything, like I always say, my personal person, who's my sister, she's like my rock. My Bula's a rock to me, man. Mm. I don't see life without her, because she's, I think if anybody had to want to know the deepest, darkest secrets, find Mapula and you have me exposed, you have my heart.
How many shots would it take?
Listen, even the unknown, Mapula knows everything, you know? It's that network and, you know, my sister as well as part of that network, because I realized that I know a lot about nothing.
Sure.
You know, because even my child's ADHD is such a challenge, Fresh. Such a huge challenge.
So how do you raise a child with ADHD though? Like what are you dealing with?
I don't know what I'm doing half the time.
Mm.
You know, you can read until you're black and blue. I remember when I took her to for her first psych evaluation, and the education psychologist said, and I remember she was six. The education psychologist was like, I want to congratulate you for taking the step. And I was like, why are you congratulating me?
Mm.
She's like, because parents don't take the step.
Yes.
Because it's too hard for them to hear that their child has difficulties.
Yes.
I was like, my gosh, I can't imagine what's going through. It's because I don't know what's going through her head.
Mm.
So I need someone to
help me.
Help me, yeah. Because I don't know. Yeah. And then the second time when she went, we went again, I think earlier this year, and the education psychologist said the same thing. And I was like, I don't understand why we're congratulating the parents. And so for me, I try to seek advice, going to specialists, and the network of my girls as are constantly talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, because I can't do this on my own because I don't know what I'm doing.
Mm.
And talking to friends, talking to my sister helps a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm.
Do you ever have conversations with Lesedi about her late mom? Does she ever ask questions?
Yeah. So we went through, I think for me, it was a bit of a life-changing moment.
Mm.
She lost her mom due to cancer, colon cancer. And, you know, the Black culture where you get to a point, you're like, my gosh, you know, this child doesn't know her mom's grave is.
Yes.
And for me, that was very heavy because I don't know her mom's grave is as well. Because I think I was traveling at the time, but we were there when she was, you know, starting to be very sick as well. And then it was a mammoth task.
Mm.
But, you know, you get to a point where you just have to pray to God and just...
Please just lift your mic up a bit.
You get to a point where you have to just ask, you know, ask for some assistance from God, really.
Mm.
Yeah. And just everything just falls into place.
Mm.
Yeah. And for me, that was a very, very difficult journey. To make sure that she knows where her mom is. And it's something that we need to do religiously as well. And I tell her what happened to her mom. We speak about her mom all the time.
Mm.
We try very hard. And she's always a happy-go-lucky child. So I also feel like I don't know her, but I know her very well. I don't think every parent can truly say they know their child, honestly.
No, you're learning them
as Yeah. Because also another thing that is... what I've learned also teaching at NSA is that, you know, we are dealing with a child at school versus a child at home.
Mm.
A child at home is totally different.
So,
versus to a child at school.
Mm.
So I'm learning my child every day. Yeah. So her knowing about what happened to her mom and also understanding her dad's ailings as well is very, very important that we talk about it as well. And also talking about the birds and the bees, you know, explaining her body. These are conversations that you have to talk about as well, you know. But as a parent, I am truly, truly challenged and I feel so blessed to have her in my life. Yeah.
You live at the Northcliffe's stairs. You literally live there. Can we talk about that ritual, as it were?
I blame COVID.
Yeah.
Honestly, because a lot of us spend time at home.
Mm.
So the ritual at the stairs started off with, because I left Joburg Ballet in 2019. I was a gutted human being when I left because I've come to understand that why I say we try to be the master of our crafts is that we've got to understand how the politics are. If they work against you, how do you navigate? Mm. If they work for you, how do you also navigate?
Mm.
And for me, I had a really, really tough time closer to the time that I left Joburg Ballet. So when I eventually packed up the courage to leave, I needed to find a purpose.
So leaving was what? I quit.
I resigned.
Oh, I can't take this anymore.
I couldn't anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't anymore. And I realized how resilient I am, you know. And I kept on saying, it will be better next year. It will be better next year. Every production we did, it will be better next year, you know. But I had such a tough
time. But what were the underlying issues, though, that had you eventually say, listen, enough?
It's so funny. I've never actually spoken about it publicly, you know. It also speaks a lot to the death of my mom because 2017, I lost my mom. And I remember this was such a huge learning curve because I realized, okay, no, I'm not going to go back to dancing. I decided I'm going to quit. I'm not going to. But realistically, I was due to be on stage 2 weeks after we buried my mom.
Jeez.
So, and I was opening night for the lead. And they kept on sending me videos and stuff like that. And it was a new production.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, but somehow 2 weeks later, I don't remember a lot. 2 weeks later, I found myself, I was on the premiere but there was a lot of politics happening with management, you know, where I got to a point where I was always true to the fact that my work has to speak for itself. I'm not an arrogant person. I'm not going to be loud about my work, but my work must be loud. It must speak volumes. You can never say that I am lazy. I never show up, you know. So I got to a point where I was thoroughly misunderstood in a place where I should feel safe in the studio.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So you are judged from here to Timbuktu, and someone's trying to figure you out every time while you are trying to figure yourself out. So that was very, very frustrating for me. And then eventually it started affecting performances. So it's okay if someone doesn't like you, Fresh, but I always knew that I'm always going to be on stage because my work speaks for itself.
Yes.
So eventually I would do all the rehearsals. So how it works is that you get cast for a certain role,
mm-hmm.
and you get different places, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's your provisional cast list.
Okay.
And then you would do all the rehearsals. You would get the lead roles, what have you. I was a senior soloist. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to interviews, your name is there. You must go do the interviews. You're the black face, supposedly. And I never like to use color, you know, because for me in my industry, I feel like you're either good or you're not good. Mm. I don't believe in black excellence either, because excellence has no color,
yes.
you know. So, and then it got to a point where I was always there rehearsing. Whenever I'm needed, I'm there. And then the performance cast list comes up.
Mm.
My name is nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'd be on the bench.
Yeah?
Yeah. So eventually, I mean, I'd been holding...
Were you the best woman for the job at the time, you feel, when you're on the bench?
I work hard. I never think I'm the best at anything.
Mm.
But I work hard.
But you deserved...
I don't deserve anything.
No, but what I'm saying, though, is did the work you put in, should it have guaranteed you be on the starting lineup?
Absolutely.
Is what you believe?
Absolutely.
And did you address it with them?
I'm passive aggressive.
Mm.
I feel like my work should have been enough to speak for itself,
mm.
you know. And also weight became an issue, and it never was an issue until it became an issue.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't deny that.
So you sat with me like this, and then one day you decided, I don't like the way you are.
No, I never had a weight issue.
Yes.
You know, but because I was not dancing that much, you benched me so much. Obviously, I'm going to get heavy.
Okay, I hear you.
Yeah,
I hear you.
The body needs to keep going.
Mm.
You know, so, and then it became an issue. But then, and then eventually I was like, nah, I'm out.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
I was literally, I'd rather be broke than having to deal with this every day.
Let's talk about the fear of choosing peace and mental health over whatever peanuts you may be giving me. Because it's not an easy call to make.
Mm.
Especially when you have a mouth to feed, you have other mouths to feed.
Feed, yeah.
You have other people looking up to you.
Absolutely.
But also, I'm losing my mind here.
Yeah.
Why should I stay here?
Hmm. Yeah. I'm never a person that scrutinizes mental health, whatever. But, you know, I just needed to get out. Because when you get to a point where you're at the parking lot, I'm not one for panic attacks, but when you don't understand what's going on here,
yes.
and you're in the car. And
that feeling at its wall.
Yeah. Mm. And I started having to deal with a lot of those every morning.
Yeah,
I
was it's not healthy.
No. Sorry. I can't explain what it is,
yeah.
but it was very, very uncomfortable. And I remember a very close friend of mine who also was at the company, but before they changed names, Yolandi, she explained the same thing. I was like, man, Dope, we call each other Dope. I was like, man, Dope, that's a very horrible feeling to experience.
No.
What? And then now it came to me and I was like, wow, okay, I get it now.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, thank you so much. Peace out. You know, and then after that, that's when someone introduced the stairs to me. A fellow dancer, Shannon Glover, she introduced the stairs. She's like, let's go to the stairs for your peace of mind. And then she introduces, she bounces, and I got stuck on it like ballet, you know, you sink your teeth in, and I just wanted to... It started off with two circles, and I was like, okay, I'm okay. And then started with four circles, and I became an obsessive compulsive.
Mm.
Started doing like 10Ks every morning, and it's still my ritual to this day. Now, because of NSA, I'll do about 6.5Ks every morning at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And sometimes in the afternoon, like today, I missed it this morning because the little one had a test.
Mm.
So we had to do the ritual dance so that I can motivate her, and then I'll catch the stairs in the afternoon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
What else is therapy to you?
Music.
In this cruel world that we're living in.
Music.
Mm.
Music.
What are you listening to?
Family. So Joe Coltrane.
Mm.
Yeah. I like to dabble between Coltrane and Keith Jarrett as well. Yeah. So
And you're a vinyl collector.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You're playing records from a record player from the 80s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'm 42 and my radiogram is as old as me. Yeah, it's from 1983. Yeah. Yeah, so I play my records from there.
And I'm told you're a regular 44 Stanley, where you go buy records.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, you seem to know my secrets, eh?
I know everything about you.
Yeah, I tend to go there because, man, it's such a cool spot.
Yes.
You know, one day I see myself just like, you know, doing like, you know, I don't know, just a show, just like being surrounded with these vinyls, you know, because records are such a beautiful culture. It's part of our history, man.
Yes.
Globally.
Globally.
And it gives me a sense of peace.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
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 I've been collecting records since I was in grade 2 or 3.
Yeah.
So welcome to the club. One of the reasons we have you on the show is because it's Heritage Month. Oh. And I feel as much as ballet is heritage we imported, there are women such as yourselves who have said, but we're going to take it and do it our way.
Yeah.
We're going to bring our own nuance to the thing.
Hmm.
Yes, you guys might still own the blueprint, but you will know when a sister is on stage.
Right.
So it's one of the reasons we have you on the show, just to big you up and say that, listen, we see the work.
Thank you.
We appreciate the work. But are we decolonizing ballet enough? And is it decolonizable?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I always say ballet's for the world, it's for the peoples, for Africa. We've made it tangible.
Mm.
Yeah, and the glass is half full.
So where are we seeing, where do we catch these shows? Where we see more sisters on stage? Where we see shows like, you did Muchachi, right?
Yeah, so that was the rain dance.
Yes.
Which I did actually the same year that my mom died, actually 2017.
Mm.
And obviously we know that, you know, there was a shortage of water.
Yes.
And I didn't know it was going to be so impactful, you know, because I was in my feelings.
Yes.
Do you know what
yes.
I mean? So, and it's so funny, people don't, how it really is very humbling how that piece is so appreciated worldwide, because I was going through such a hard time with the company and also the loss of my mom. And then this Queen Mujaji, solo just brought so much joy to people. And it rained a week later.
Oh, wow.
After doing it, because what people don't know is that we did it inside the reservoir.
Yes.
It dried up. And at the time, the ballet company had partnered up with, oh man, the name escapes me, but we did like, you know, breaking ballet stories, you know, the topics that were top of mind at the time, and the water shortage was part of top of discussion at the time, and hence, you know, the representation of Queen Mujaji at the time.
Yes.
So yeah, for instance, I mean, there's so much that's going on. Like, for instance, I advocate so much for Joburg Ballet because there are young upcoming black ballerinas in the company, and like right now they are busy on a spring gala as well. Mm. There's lots happening in Cape Town as well.
Yeah.
So, but there's not enough.
Exactly.
There's not enough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What are you working on right now, if at all, in terms of ballet?
So, for instance, right now, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say it. Right now, my focus is the teachings, understanding the teachings of the kids that I have, because that is a challenge every day.
Yes.
And because I'm still performing professionally, there's a big unveiling that's happening on the 24th of this month, September. And it's part of the revamping of Waterport Theatre. So I don't know if I'm allowed to say it.
It's too late. We have.
So it's got to do with the unveiling of
so
the stars.
So we get to see you dance? Or we're gonna
Yes, I'm going to be dancing that night. Days. Yeah, I'm going to be performing that night. I'm performing on the 24th. And I think it's going to be a very beautiful evening. I think for me, I've never really celebrated my name myself. Yes. And I appreciate it. I've always appreciated people, supporters always appreciating, celebrating my name and my work.
That's why we have you here.
Yes. Thank you so much. I think I don't take it for granted. I think it's that imposter syndrome, you know, that we have about ourselves. I'm sure you have it at points. But this time it's like, you know, seeing your name there for good.
Yes.
It's there to stay.
Yes.
And I appreciate that with so much in my heart. Yeah.
We're out of time because I know you've got a lecture to get to, right?
Yeah.
What time is your class? Is it like now?
We can't.
I don't want you to be late. I mean, these kids need to put in hours.
So, yeah, we've got, they've on a second break right now. So yeah. I'll make it.
So we can have 5 more minutes.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Of course. Yeah.
on our journey as human beings, we deal with a lot. You've dealt with a lot. You know, we deal with a lot of loss, whether it's your mom, your brother, gigs. We even lose ourselves.
Absolutely.
How are you dealing with that part of your life where I've lost mom, I've lost brother, I've lost gigs, I might have lost friends, mm-hmm. I might have lost myself
yeah.
in the process of trying to deal with everything else. What's your peace? Like, what gives you peace, brings you peace, and reminds you that it's a new day, we have to do this again?
The bubble.
Yeah.
The bubble effect, which I was taught in dancing.
Tell us about it.
Shutting out the noise.
Aha.
Yeah. I call it the bubble effect. That's how Martin used to explain it. Like, for instance, this is the best way I can explain it. For instance, every time when Martin's dancers used to perform anywhere here in South Africa, because you never see us out there, and the only time you see us is on stage, because people are always curious as to what was happening inside
yes.
the studios. So every time you saw us on stage, backstage would be so full.
Mm.
And he used to always separate us from everybody else.
Mm, the know? Bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's how I've taken that into my life, into my personal life. And that's how I deal with life as it is today. And I'm so grateful. And it's amazing that you were saying on radio today that, man, it's a good day because I'm grateful.
Mm.
Gratitude keeps you going.
Geez, so you listen from 6 a.m.?
Yeah, because I couldn't run.
Said,
yeah.
Because I said that at 6 a.m.
Yeah, because I run early in the morning.
Yo, that's so dope. So you run yeah. to our radio show.
Yeah, I do listen to you guys. Yeah.
That is so dope.
I do.
Mama, I made it.
Yeah, it's very interesting, really. The bubble effect has literally brought me to today.
What do you do when your thoughts make their way into the bubble? When your bubble is meant to be pure at that time? Because sometimes it's our thoughts
mm-hmm.
that let us down. Sometimes it's our thoughts of self-doubt or the imposter syndrome that you alluded to earlier on that actually the problem. Sometimes it's not the people outside. It's us.
No, I wouldn't blame people outside. It's definitely me. I struggle a lot with imposter syndrome.
Mm.
And also I'm passive aggressive.
Mm.
So you can imagine the brain is always busy.
Mm.
Yeah. There's no quiet. But the bubble really does help me a lot.
Mm.
And I've got to find, in the busy and the crazy, I've got to always find the positive. And man, the positive just makes me smile always. And I always have to be loyal to happiness.
So
you've got to find loyalty and happiness. And there's so many things that give us happiness.
Mm.
The smallest of things. I've got an obsession with the moon.
Yes.
And it's like I'm always, and that's also another thing that teaches me patience, is that there's a certain time in the month that it's a full moon.
Mm.
Every time you look outside, it's not there yet. It's not there yet.
Yes.
And then there's a certain time when it's a full moon where it shines a certain way on my balcony at home.
Ah.
And I'm like, oh,
there we
peace
go.
Has come.
Welcome back.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Love it. We are out of time, like I said, not because we don't want you to stay, but because you have kids that are waiting to suckle from your knowledge.
Absolutely. And it drives me crazy that I know them.
And it's worth it though, eh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I'm the kind of teacher that I'm not their favorite because I'm very strict and I shout a lot.
But they'll remember you in 20 years.
I hope so. Yes. I hope so. I think
because you're instilling in them a discipline that they will be able to apply in the rest of their lives, for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
But they don't know it yet.
Yeah. And for me, what I want them to always take with them is to always show up for yourself.
Yes.
Just show up every day.
Mm.
Yeah. I remember I was training a student this morning,
mm.
making her run because she's got her ballet, you know, her majors soon. And I said, feeling sorry for yourself is a luxury, you know, because then you are in your feelings, allowing yourself to not show up. And that's a luxury. Not showing up is a luxury because you've taken the choice not to show up.
Mm.
You've taken the choice to just chill. It's a luxury.
No, it's a conversation I keep having with Greg Maloka about pity parties.
Yeah.
That are dope, but yeah, you're the only one who's there.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I remember that. I'll tell
you. Yeah, the only one at that party and that place is boring. One thing my late ex-wife taught me was...
So rest in peace.
Yeah. Yes, yes. One thing she taught me was don't run away from the feelings that you're feeling.
Of course, acknowledge them.
Acknowledge them.
Yeah.
Identify them so you can better deal with them. Then when you move on from them, that dealt with, there's no, I've buried that hatchet with myself or with those feelings, but I've erected a tombstone to remind me.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I've taken with me from her.
Absolutely.
That go through the feeling.
That's beautiful.
Feel it. And then re-find reasons to be happy.
Right.
Because we have reasons to be grateful.
Right. Like, for instance, I know with the loss, I was talking to Unati about it.
Mm.
And she was saying, my friend, thank you so much for giving me this space to heal.
Mm.
And I said, healing doesn't stop.
Yeah.
You know,
it's for the rest of your life.
Yeah, it's for the rest of your life.
And then when you get to heaven, you shout at them, why did you leave me?
Yeah.
So you're not healed.
I mean, your late wife, the passing, as well, the passing of my mom, you realize that there is a massive part of you that just goes.
Yes.
So now you've just got to carry on with life, navigating the new half of you. You know, acknowledge it.
Yeah.
That there's missing parts.
Mm.
But we live with those missing parts.
Yeah.
And we spread light to those missing parts, yeah.
We were having a conversation with the kids the other day because they understand that we communicated every single day since 2002. And after our separation, we actually communicated even more.
Yeah.
We actually became closer in our separation and divorce.
Yeah.
And
so
they understand the gap that has happened now in my life.
It's huge.
Because it's been comms. Because we communicate 10 to 20 times a day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
For 23 years.
And speaking of that, you know, as a child, you're like, oh man, my mother phones me like 5 million times a day. To this day, what I cannot navigate is that I can't pick up the phone.
It stops immediately. And it stops immediately.
Yeah. And she used to call me every day. That's why I say to people, guys, communicate with your parents.
Yes.
And I appreciate that she was that kind of woman.
Mm, mm,
3 o'clock in the morning, happy birthday.
Yes.
And that's why I don't celebrate birthdays. I never have been, because it's just between you and God, you know.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that. And that's, I guess, that's what creates that significant gap and a hole.
Absolutely.
And that hole will always be there.
And there's no warning. It happens immediately, and you must deal with it immediately. And still live.
Yeah.
And still show up for everyone else.
Loss is every day.
Yeah.
Loss is every day. Yeah. It's like when you dream of that person, you wake up, you're like,
yeah.
Just lost that person again. Yeah. And it's fresher and fresher and fresher. But we just got to acknowledge and move on. And the bubble for me keeps me going every day. Yeah.
And like I said on the radio this morning when I spoke about gratitude, it doesn't matter how down the chips are.
Yeah.
There's always something to be grateful
for. Yeah.
There's always something to be grateful.
Yeah, because things are rough, man.
So tap into that.
Yeah.
Tap into that.
Yeah.
My prayers to God now are not, I never ask God for anything. Mm. I just thank Him for what I have already. I thank Him for lessons from what I've lost.
Yeah, I think.
Because I'm sure He also gets tired, man. It's like, yeah, this one is back.
Yeah.
Ask Him for more.
Yeah, I think the older I get now, because it's so funny, like I just realized, for me, I just feel like, you know, the relationship with God now has to be more intentional. And I think it's really beautiful to be the age that I am. I guess you always used to hear people saying that in your 40s life is really clearer, you know. It really is.
Yeah.
Because you acknowledge that you're sad at times, but you've got to just be loyal to the happy moments, because they are there all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we have to let you go.
We're
being shouted at because you need to go teach and lecture. But thank you so much, Kitty. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being the light in an environment where a lot of our daughters and sisters might have felt like, I don't have a chance here. I can never dance in Russia. I can never dance in Europe. I can never dance for the royal Dutch family or for a Nelson Mandela. You've done all of that.
Yeah.
And you continue to dance. And this Heritage Month, we just wanted to remind you that we see what you do.
Thank you.
And we see your efforts to remind people that I'm a black girl doing ballet. I'm not just a ballerina. Because unfortunately, you also have that weight on your shoulder. That you're also still representing us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and as unfair as it might feel, I need you to understand that it's a invisible load you're also carrying. That the minute you're on stage, We are all rooting for you.
Thank you.
All of us are saying, yes, she's clumsy, but just not on the stage right now, God, please.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and I appreciate it, honestly, you know, because I think more than anything, kids have to take, it's that whole thing with mentorship as well.
Yeah.
I always feel like you can't choose the mentor.
Yes.
The mentor must be ready to take in a mentor. And I'm so grateful to Martin for that. I could have done it without him. Yeah.
Kitty, keep on your toes.
Thank you.
And keep kicking butt.
My ugly toes.
they're fine. We hardly ever see them.
My war scars.
Yes. That's probably why she loves shoes that much.
Yes.
So that she can prettify the toes that she is bashing right now.
And I never wear sandals.
A collector of shoes, a constant wearer of black, always nude nails, an incredible ballerina. She kicks butt at radio. And we love her. Thank you very much, Kitty.
Love you more. Thank you.
And thanks for tuning in to this episode on this Heritage Month, celebrating people who are part of our heritage, but we don't make enough noise about. She is one of them. Coming to you from Discover TV in Fourways, Johannesburg. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network. You can email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works. Lati for all of the social media. Keletso Modisa again for all of the executive production that happens on the show. Until next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. Thanks for watching. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for sharing.